Oh, g'day, Groovers. Welcome to another instalment of the U Project. It's Craig, Anthony Harper, Tiffany Ann Cook over there at TYP Central. Hi, Tiff.
Good morning, boss. How are you?
I'm very good. Tell everyone, we'll introduce Kerry, the lovely Kerry, who looks like a goddamn mermaid with her long, blonde, flowing hair down to her waist. She looks like Daryl Hannah out of Splash. God, I loved Daryl Hannah back in the day. You two are like, who the fuck's Daryl Hannah?
Yeah,
Daryl is a girl, by the way, not a boy. Tell everyone what you did last night.
I went to my first real live improv workshop in the city.
Yeah.
I was terrified, Harps.
Why did you do it?
Two reasons. One, you know that I'm doing some TV episodes of the podcast and I feel super awkward and terrified on screen. So I thought I'd do something that terrifies me more.
Yeah.
So that felt less terrifying.
Right. And did you enjoy it?
I had a really good time.
Because you rang me on the way, or I rang you about work and you said, I'm on the way to bloody improv. And I went, well, enjoy that. And you were shitting yourself and you loved it. So
yeah.
Isn't it good when we do things that scare us and then we actually learn a bit and we have a good experience?
Yeah.
And we step out of the bloody little comfort box that we build for ourselves.
That's it.
Kerry Potthaus, welcome to the U Project. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. How are you?
I am amazing. Thank you. And I love that as an intro, the bit about the fear, you know, stepping out of your comfort zone. That is just so me. So me. I love that. I push myself all the time.
Yeah, well, I think that's like where we grow and live and learn, right? It's like if your life is set on comfort, fucking good luck growing or learning or evolving. Yeah.
And it's so boring too, I reckon. You got to challenge yourself. You got to fail a lot too, but you got to, yeah. I don't know what it is. I just don't mind. I don't like being scared of stuff, but I kind of just do it anyway. And I feel the fear, but I've just done SAS and you'll probably talk about that, but it was kind of like that. Like you're standing on the start line and you're thinking, my God, how am I going to do this? I'm so scared and your heart's beating. And you're freaking out, but you just go and you do it. And then you look back and go, wow, okay, that wasn't that fun, but I did it.
Well, while we're on it, I mean, we didn't all watch it, but I watched some of it as much of it as I could. And you were amazing. Everyone was amazing. And what were the, not everyone was amazing. It's a couple of dickheads, let's be honest. No, not at all. What did you come away from that with? And I'm sure it's 50 things, but if you had to kind of condense it, one or two takeaways, good or bad for you?
Okay, so first of all, for your listeners, just so they know what we're talking about, this is SAS Australia. So this is a course. We didn't call it a show. We called it a course because literally it's not a fake show where, you know, you're on air and then the cameras stop and then you kind of go relax and everyone's like, okay, let's shoot that again, whatever. This is just 24/7, high anxiety. They're putting you through the exact, well, not exact same, kind of a watered down version of what SAS soldiers would go through for selection into the SAS. So it's pretty full on. What did I come away with? I guess exactly what I mentioned before, how it was just, I guess, a way of confirming that I really do love to challenge myself and I really stand up to the biggest challenges in the world, like, you know, standing on the court for gold medal match point, you know, what a challenge, you know, at the Olympic Games. And then, you know, over the last 20 years, haven't been challenged like that before. And when the opportunity came up, I couldn't deny it. So I think one thing that I got out of it was just say yes to stuff.
Yeah.
Even if you're scared, just say yes and have a go.
How did the opportunity arise? Did they just ring you and go, hey, do you want to do this?
Well, the funny thing is one of the other recruits, as we're called, messaged me and said, listen, I don't know if you know, I'm doing this show. It was Yana Pittman. I'm doing this show. They're looking for another female retired athlete. Are you interested? And I got it at 7:30 in the morning. I'm lying in bed. I'm half asleep and I'm just, you know, doing as you do, you pick up your phone. And I just started messaging. I wrote the whole message back saying, oh, no, I'm too old. I'm too broken. I can't do that. They won't want me. You know, all these doubts I was writing them all out, and I just looked at the message and I was about to press send, and at the last minute I decided, hey, what the heck? And I went, delete, 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 delete. And I said, okay, no worries. I'll speak to the producers. So, you know, just take that first step, because I thought, okay, if I speak to them, they might go, oh, all right, you are a bit too old and broken from being an athlete for 20 years. Maybe you won't fit. But when I spoke to them, they were like, you fit what we need as that person in this show and the age group as well. Normally they wouldn't take people over 50, or especially women over 50. And I was 55 when I shot the show, 56 now. The course. When I did the course. But at the end of the day, it's still a TV show and they edit it up to make it look good or bad.
Of course they do. But, it, you know, I've said this many times about that show and the British one as well. Of all the, in inverted commas, reality shows, to me that's the only show that resembles reality.
Yeah.
Like where... I'm like, these people are not fucking acting. This is not pretend. That woman, that dude, they are shitting themselves. Like I'm an observer of human behavior. I work in high performance. I work with athletes. I work with people under pressure. I've been in the middle of the shit a lot. And I look at you guys, I go, no, they're fucking hurting. They're not pretend hurting. They're really hurting. So I went, I can't watch this because I'm not going to fucking stop. I get sucked in and I don't have time. And I might go back and watch it, but yeah, go on.
I was going to say there's three things about, you know, being on this course and that are pretty full on. And that's the, you know, 24/7 anxiety of what's going to happen next. You have no idea at any moment what's going to happen next. And you know that it's going to be full on. It's not going to be a tea party. It's going to be something hard, scary, injury possibilities, you know, whatever, dangerous. And then, so that's the first thing, the anxiety 24/7. And then the second thing is the fear part of it. So when you do come to the particular thing that you're doing that day, the task, the fear that you have to overcome. And then the third part of it is the physicality is full on. Yeah. And that's what got me in the end. Like I had to leave because my knee just basically gave out. I've had knee surgery since then, so it's a bit sad. And I've had 5 knee surgeries on that knee now, so it was never going to end well.
So you like the Terminator. Have you had a knee replacement or no?
No, I don't even entertain those words in my head. I can't even say it out loud because I just want my body to, you know, heal, and I just want to be strong and just, yeah, I don't want to interfere at this point with my joints, but who knows, maybe later down the track.
You know what's interesting about that show, because it's a bit of a metaphor for life, right, in that, like, the interesting thing about humans is if you ask most people, just like I do in my work or at a workshop or one-on-one or whatever it is, you just go, you know, would you like to be more resilient? They're going to go, yeah. Would you like to be in better shape physically? Yeah. Would you like to be mentally tougher? Yeah. Would you like to produce better outcomes? Yeah. Would you like more, I don't know, more growth? And yeah, everyone wants all of this stuff, right? But the journey to that is pain, right? Like the byproduct of, you know, and you think about, like, life is uncertain. Life is on, and often it's going to be you're stepping into stuff that's unfamiliar, that's uncomfortable, and that's essentially the show in a nutshell. Sorry, the program in a nutshell. And it's only when we go, all right, I'm going to get uncomfortable. I'm going to work through the middle of the shit, the uncertainty, the unfamiliarity, the unknown. I'm going to do it. But that's literally how you grow, learn, evolve, adapt, develop skill, insight, awareness. That's how you get better. And like a lot of us want the outcome without the journey, right?
Yeah. And I think it's not all pain, you know, the journey, you know, and it is what you make it as well. Like, you know, we could have, you know, people who left before me couldn't handle it, you know, so it is for them, that's what they made of it. You know, this is too much pain. But for me, you know, it was the challenge. It was the camaraderie. It was the kind of, oh, what's next? You know, kind of almost turning those things around in your head when they're happening to being okay with it. And when I look back at my sporting journey, you know, to getting a gold medal, obviously there was pain in there, but we really focused on trying to make it fun, you know, and trying to, you know, laugh through things. You know, it wasn't as painful as SAS in many ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were a lot of beautiful and amazing moments in that, you know, that growth and that journey as well.
Don't need to tell us who, but did you create any lasting friendships out of that?
Yeah, look, in COVID it's really hard because we haven't actually seen each other. And because when the show, we filmed in April and then not long after that, you know, we couldn't really talk about it until it came to air. And then when it came to air, we were in the middle of lockdown. So I've got a lot of friendships social media wise and we chat, you know. Yana Pittman probably the closest in that, you know, we come from a similar background and we supported each other through it. And obviously she did amazing going all the way to the end. And Erin Holland, believe it or not, she is a presenter in fashion and Miss Australia, I think. And so like just crazy different type of and half my age, but you know, you just kind of find people and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah,
you know, you kind of have a little bit of a connection there. We chat.
Yeah, I love Yana. I've met Yana a few times. She was hardcore back in the day, as you know.
She still is.
She was a fucking nightmare back in the day. She trained at my joint a few times, but lovely. But she reminds me. You probably wouldn't know because Winter Olympian. But I also trained Jackie Cooper for quite a long time.
Yeah, Jackie. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and she also complete fucking lunatic, right? But lovely. But and by that I mean, folks listening, not a real lunatic, but
focused. The nicest way. I think the way of explaining both, and yeah, I can see that Jackie and Yana are very similar in that, is that they're just massive high achievers in anything they do, and they don't give themselves a break sometimes from achieving. And I've been a high achiever, but I kind of have big breaks as well where, you know, I don't need to do something. That's why having a child for me, and Yana's had, like, she's got twins coming now, but it's almost like, wow, how many kids can you have? Like, one's
that's,
enough.
That's
for me.
Six, right? She's bringing it up to six.
She just loves kids. She absolutely loves kids. So, and for her, it's just, it's just another challenge to kind of bring up now a couple of twins. It's going to be full on. But for me, you know, I just, I love being really good at something, but at the same time, I love being lazy and doing nothing. And I've actually, because I'm normally the last kind of 10 years, most of my income has been through motivational speaking and presenting and things like that. Obviously, that was taken away with COVID and most of it, some of it's just a little bit online. But I didn't really pursue a lot of extra stuff because I was just like, you know what, I just need a break. I just actually welcomed it as a break to just look after me. And that's when I started working out again, which is that's then led to you know, being fit enough to do SAS. So, yeah, it's been an interesting nearly 2 years now and I've really actually enjoyed the break. I don't know if I want to go full on and work hard again.
Probably don't need to.
I don't need to.
Life.
What am I going to do?
On a practical level, if we, you know, do a couple of speaking gigs here and there, life is probably not too bad. I wanted to ask you, just before I chatted to you, I interviewed a young guy. I was telling Tiff, not with Tiff, with Melissa, who also works with me. We interviewed a guy called Davey Fogarty, who is a young guy. He's 27. He's 27. It's not all about money, folks, of course, but this is interesting. He's worth $170 million. He's a young dude from Adelaide.
What?
He invented the Udi, right? And a bunch of other stuff. But he's just, but you know what? Like, he's laid back, he's cool, he's cruisy. He's a really nice guy. And the fact that he's made lots of money and he's an entrepreneur and good on him. But we were talking about this thing and I wanted to ask you about it as well. This is a long-winded segue, so get comfy. I was listening this morning to another interview with a guy called Lex Friedman that I listened to and a guy called Kevin Systrom who created Instagram. And he sold Instagram at 27 from $1 billion to Facebook. So he's 27. He's sold his company that he created with another dude for $1 billion. And he was saying, not like, oh, it was horrible then, but there's this thing of what do I do now? It's like I've got more money than I ever need, than I ever thought I would have. I also remember, I don't know if it was Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong, were when they got back from the moon, they were depressed for like a year or two. I want to know the idea, like for most Australians, most people anywhere in the world, the idea of winning an Olympic gold medal is obviously a fantasy. I've won many between midnight and 6 a.m. I've won multiple, I want you to know. Tell me about the idea of winning an Olympic gold medal and the reality of it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think in the 20 years since I've ever had that question. So the idea of it is quite, at first, far-fetching. It's like, really? Like, is that going to actually be a possibility? And to, you know, can we actually do it in our home city, in my home city, in my home country? Like, wow, that's massive. But then as your results start to improve and, you know, you get to the point where you know that your one-on-one, your skills can match the team that's on the other side, but you start to realize that what lets you down is actually up here, what keeps you at second and third. So we, as we got close to the Olympics, we won medals, but we would never won a gold medal in any world tour event. We'd come second and third many times, you know, about 17 times, I think. I think I've got about that many medals. But we still couldn't quite crack the top. Like, we'd beat one of the top teams to get into the semi or into the final, but then we'd fall at that point because we really didn't believe it. So the idea of it is kind of nice and scary, and but you've got to put it out there, you know, as an athlete, that's the ultimate, right? And then you've got to build your belief. I think then the reality comes when you build the belief, and it's just layer upon layer upon layer of belief. And it can't always just be because you've won it before or won an event before, which is equivalent to the Olympics. It's just a world tour event with the same teams. You can't just go on that, because when you get to the Olympics, it's very, very different as well, because there's all these other events going on, and, you know, the whole world is watching you, not just your community of your sport, which is what happens with, you know, volleyball, for instance. You don't get many people outside of our community watching our events. So the reality is that building the layering of the belief, and we spend a lot of time doing work on that away from volleyball. So we did things to challenge ourselves. So we had an amazing group of coaches. We had a volleyball coach who looked after our skills. We had a mindset coach who looked after our thoughts. And we had a conditioning coach who looked after our bodies. So, and all together they actually blended very well and got along very well. And, you know, they helped each other. Our volleyball coach also had a strong mindset background as well. So we got him on board because of what he was saying rather than what he was doing. Like, what he was doing with us as a drill was very simple. You know, it wasn't because he had these great, amazing drills and strategies. We did a lot of the strategies ourselves. He kept us, like, he got us in the right space at the right time mentally as well, together with our mindset coach. So we did crazy things, and people have heard it before, walking on hot coals, walking on broken glass. We did, you know, we went away for a camp where we were riding tandem bikes and following whistles, blindfolded, holding eggs. Like, this is just a high level explanation, but, you know, blindfolded rock climbing where, you know, you're blindfolded, you're climbing up the wall, and, you know, your partner, Natalie, and the coaches are at the bottom just directing me where to put my hands and feet. So the total building trust and building that, you know, complete connection as a team. And yeah, there was so much. You look like you want to say something, Tiffany.
Good luck getting that past the lawyers in 2021.
Yeah, well, exactly. So when we started doing the firewalking, our federation was just, they were like, crazy, what are you doing? You better not hurt yourself. You know, we got to look at whether we want to fund you or not. And no, we're not giving you any money to pay this guy who's doing all this crazy stuff with you. But it was the guy doing the crazy stuff which actually helped us win the medal, which was actually what catapulted our sport into a new level.
What were you going to say, Tiff?
I was just visualizing the whole rock climbing thing. Rock climbing's terrifying enough.
Yeah. 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 And by the way, do it with a blindfold on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting that you, you know, you put yourself in a position of vulnerability and, but trust. And I think, you know, that like building a team where you've got a coach and you've got your conditioning person and you've got your mind person and you've got all the athletes, it sometimes it is about their, I guess, their technical credibility and their track record and all that. But also I feel like a lot of times, Kerry, it's about the energy that that person brings into that space. And there's something, it's almost like an X factor being around them. And they might not be technically the best coach on the planet, but when you put together their energy and their personality and their skills and their thinking, you know, all of a sudden it's the right person for you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I always explained him as he was the last piece of the puzzle. It's like a jigsaw puzzle all fitting together. And you know, his piece of jigsaw might not have fit any other team, but it's exactly what we realized we needed. And the big thing that we were very good at, and the thing I think that I really drove within our team, was to seek what we needed instead of waiting for it to come.
Yeah.
So instead of relying on the coaches that we had in Australia, we went overseas and found our volleyball coach. We went purposely looking for someone who could get us to the point where we were in medal contention. That was before the 96 games. So in 1994, summer of, we went to California and we told all our volleyball mates, we'd only just been on the tour for about a year, and we said, look, we're looking for a coach. The sport's still young in Australia. We don't have any really good beach coaches yet. We want someone, because obviously the US had been playing beach volleyball for many, many more years than we had. It was a big, very popular sport over there. We want someone to teach us and get us to the next level. So we just we interviewed a bunch of coaches, which was basically just getting them to take us through a training session. And Steve Anderson was one of those coaches, and he was a former player, and he had all these theories, and a lot of them were theories. They weren't like strategies or skill things or drills. They were theories around what he wanted the game to look like. And because we were looking for something to elevate our game, it just kind of fit. We're like, we want you. Can you come back to Australia and give up your life here and take us to the Olympics? And he said yes, and he did it. And he ended up being in Australia for 17 years. He's gone to Canada now, and then he had a big influence on the Canadian beach volleyball scene, and now he's doing some stuff in corporate, still living in Canada. But, yeah, it changed people's lives.
You know, what's really interesting is there's a lot of – and I want to ask you about the transferables from sport to life and business and performance in other realms. But like you were talking about this awareness that you had, that you needed to get your mind right and you needed to believe in yourselves, and that you had 16 or 17 times where you got to a silver or gold medal or a final or a semi-final, but you didn't win, or silver or bronze, I should say. And there's this whole thing around metacognition, which is thinking about thinking, which is, why do I think the way that I do? How does my thinking get in the way of my physiology and my skill and my performance? How does my thinking serve me or sabotage me? And then trying to change the way that I think. Because there's one, recognizing I need to think differently is easy, but fucking reprogramming this thing up here, which is like a dog with three dicks between my ears, it's like, how on earth do I reprogram that? It takes a while, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes a lot of push and shove as well, because when I was first introduced to the thought of my thoughts, it was like, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with my thoughts. I'm okay. Like, don't tell me how to think. No, this is just like airy-fairy spiritual stuff. I'm not into that, you know. And I had all this pushback at first, but then when the first time it clicked was when I started working with the mindset coach, and he said to me, our mindset coach, his name is Kirik Ashley, and he said to me, you know, how's it going? How's your game going? I said, oh, look, I'm really good. I've got the fastest serve in the world.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it's going often. Sometimes it can hit Natalie in the back of the head or fly all the way out you know, way outside the court. I can't control it. And the first thing he said to me at the time, which has made a massive impact in my entire life, like every time I have thoughts about myself, he said, the first thing you need to change is the way you talk about it. So it really made me understand that the way I describe myself, the way I think about myself, makes me then, you know, verbalize that. Yes, so the way I describe myself is that I'll just live into that and I'll always be the fastest server in the world that's really inaccurate because that's what I'm describing myself as.
Mm.
So we worked on a different way of describing that and I started living into it. Now, of course, I had to do the repetitions because you can't just change your thoughts and then don't do the actions. You still have to go and go, okay, I need to fix up my nutrition or my fitness or my whatever. I had to start to go and serve ball after ball after ball after ball at a target. But because I started to believe, I said it to myself enough and I read the words and I just overnight, like it was like a record spinning over and over in my head. I'm the fastest server in the world and I'm working on becoming really accurate so I can serve that point, that ball to a pinpoint. And I started to believe it and it started to happen. The 100% proof of this was the last 2 points of the Olympics. I'm standing there with a ball in my hand, second to last point, gold medal, not match point yet.
Mm.
Even, it's a, I think it was 10-11. We were 10, so I had to get us to 11 all. I'm standing there and I knew that I was going to serve an ace. I believed in myself enough to take the biggest risk and serve straight down the line. And know exactly where I was going, know exactly how I was going to do it because I practiced it over and over and over and over and I did it. And then Natalie comes screaming out and the crowd goes wild. It's 11 all, like this is now match point. And Natalie's screaming up towards me and I look at the video of this and my face is completely stony. Like I've not even got a smile on my face. It's like, yes, okay, I know this is happening. I've been here. This is it. Like it's just, there was no faltering in my belief and my thought pattern. And then I went back and I knew that at that point I'd been taught that if I just served an ace in one position, use the same approach, the same amount of pressure, the same amount of speed, but just bring it in the court a little bit to lessen the risk in case it just flies out a little bit. It's still going to be a tough serve. So I went for the middle of the court this time and nearly served another ace. She got a hand to it, but she overblew it and it went out over the net and we won. And so, you know, to me, that is the proof that, you know, whatever you want to call it, I think you called it metacognition.
Metacognition is thinking about thinking.
Yeah, that is, it's crucial. We have to, I call it, here's my thing, I call it Marie Kondoing our thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people know who Marie Kondo is, but she's just a neat freak. You know, it's all about being neat and tidying things up and you know. So that's what I like to do. When I'm talking with my coaching clients, I tell them, we're going to Marie Kondo your thoughts, get them all in alignment and so that they work towards your goals.
Well, that's what you were in the middle of then and what you do with your clients now is just what's called in psychology a metacognitive process, which is essentially we're thinking about how we think. We're recognizing that we think a certain way, good or bad. We're not overthinking it and creating anxiety. We're just acknowledging what is. One of my favorite sayings is, whatever my mind thinks, my body believes, right? So if I, for example, think, and I'm sitting in my studio at home alone, and there's no one in my house, but if all of a sudden I think, there's somebody in my house right now, if I had that thought. And now let's say there's no one here, I'm totally safe, but I think there's someone here. I have that thought. And then the next thing is, well, I'm definitely in danger. Mm. And then the next thought, which is all a self-created story, is that I'm probably going to die, you know, because, I mean, why else would they be here? And then the next thought is, well, it's imminent, right? Now, despite the fact that there's no evidence, this is just a thought. This is a cognitive construct. This is a self-created story. Despite the fact that it's not real, my body doesn't know it's not real. So now my body is in a state of stress and anxiety and elevated blood pressure, adrenaline, cortisol, sympathetic nervous system, heart rate, breathing. All of these things are happening despite the fact that it's not real. And so this is, and when we understand that our mind doesn't operate in isolation ever, neither does our body, neither does our emotional system. And so this is the integration of a physiological coach, a psychological coach, a skill coach, and having that awareness that, you know, I'm not a bunch of different things. I'm an integrated system. I'm an integrated system of thoughts and creativity and physiology and sociology and awareness and perhaps spirituality, depending on your beliefs. And, you know, when you look at the totality of who we are and how we are, then you can create a different operational paradigm to approach life. And geez, I'm sounding deep, aren't I? But it's true though. It's true though, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, look, I don't have that psychological background in a learning sense, but I have the experience, like the experience of what I've been through and what I went through. And, you know, there were so many times I can look back in different parts of my career where it was because I really gathered my thoughts and changed the way and flipped my thoughts.
Yeah.
Because often it's the doubt and the negative feelings that stop you from doing things that, you know, get you to where you want to go. So to be able to flip those and turn them into positives, I mean, I do a simple exercise with people who want to work with me where I just get them to basically list all their fears and their doubts, and we flip them around and create a creed, like a mantra, and you just need to read it multiple times a day. Now, I did this recently with SAS because just before I went on the course, I really badly injured my knees. I didn't tell the producers about it because I still really wanted to make the start line, but I was really worried that I would not even get to the start line. I trained so hard, and then I badly injured my knees. I had to go into hospital, get the fluid drained, you know, get all the cortisone shots and everything just to get to the start line. And the last week I was really starting to stress about it. So I did what I had done before in my sporting career. I wrote down all the things that I was worried about. I flipped them, and I had a really powerful mantra that basically says, I'm strong, I'm resilient, you know, my age is an advantage, my knees are going to carry me with strength and grace, you know, all these wonderful things about why I'm so strong and good and able to do this thing that I had no idea about what was going to happen. And I printed it out and I put it all around my house. I put it next to my bed. I put it in the bathroom. I put it behind my computer in my office. I read it multiple times a day, which settled my anxiety and basically started to build my belief and my strength again and mentally got me to the start line feeling good.
I was going to say, that's great. I love that. But you understand, you know, I used a few jargony words, but you understand it. The fact that you don't have psychological training per se, like you actually get it on an experiential level. This is not, you're not some person who read about an idea or a construct or a psychological principle. Like, and this is the beauty of somebody like you coaching, is that you're not drawing on some abstract theory. You're going, okay, so me, I'm vulnerable. I get anxious. I overthink. I have self-doubt of, you know, and I've performed at the highest level and a range of levels. And this is, I think that's the beauty of people like you doing corporate speaking and teaching and coaching, is that you can go, which is kind of what I do. I've done lots of stuff. This is what I think. This is what I've seen. This is what worked for me. This is what didn't work for me. Doesn't mean it will or won't for you, but here are my thoughts and ideas and experiences. And that's your kind of disclaimer, you know, because you're not pretending to be something you're not.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the big thing too there is I absolutely love passing on what I've learned. Mm. Like I love doing podcasts. I love speaking. I love coaching now. I've actually resisted doing the coaching for a while because I've thought, no, I can reach more people by speaking on stage. But with COVID, that's not really working. Yeah. But I love that personal connection and starting to, you know, really help a person one-on-one. I also mentor, I've mentored through the Sports Hall of Fame and I've mentored a couple of athletes. I work with the AIS, the Gold Medal Ready Program, which is a program where all Olympic gold medalists come together and they work with current athletes towards winning gold medals at the Olympics. And that's just about sharing our stories and our experiences. That's all it is. That's our role, which has been amazing. And we work together with the Army, the Army Commandos. So that's been incredible hearing their stories as well. Because their stories about how they deal with fear and doubt and all that sort of stuff. I mean, for them, it's life or death. For us, it's like, oh, yeah, a medal or a loss or a whatever. Yeah. You still fly home. You still go to your family and nothing changes. But for them, it's a lot more serious. So it really puts things into perspective.
I can probably guess the answer in some way or shape, but what were the transferables, Kerry, for you from elite sport to life? What's the stuff that you took away that helped you do life better and business better and, you know, all the other stuff?
In the past, I've written a list and there'd probably be 20 things on there because I've helped transitioning athletes in the past as well. If there were just like, if I could just kind of give you about two or three, I think confidence is a massive thing, just the confidence of, you know, having that success in sport and thinking, well, I can reach a goal. I can set a goal and then I can reach it. So that's something I think that you can bring into any area of your life. Obviously, you know, teamwork and resilience and those, you know, those things that are quite obvious. I think for most athletes too, because, you know, at the highest level, because you realize how important mindset is, it's all those areas of mindset that you've learned through sport, you know, the obviously your thoughts and your belief systems and all that sort of stuff that you can then carry into any job really and deal with whatever's thrown at you. Just organization, like it's just, there's so many. Just, to me, it's exactly the same. It's just another area of your life. So if you were a successful athlete at the highest level, and you don't have to have won a gold medal, you could have gone to the Olympics, you could be a national champion, whatever it is, you've succeeded pretty high at your sport, then I believe you can do anything. And I mean anything. You know, you can go and learn and take a, you know, do a 10-year degree and be successful at that and start a new career if that's what you want to do. I just think that what you learn in sport is just, there's no other comparison to all the things that you learn through sport.
When you do gigs, I'm just interested as a fellow speaker, when you do your corporate stuff, is your stuff primarily keynotes where you turn up and you do a 45 or a 60 and then you get off?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I've been doing for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Do you have one or two or do you have five or like,
when I was at my busiest, I'd have one every couple of weeks.
What I meant was, do you have one or two gigs as in I have this stock standard presentation and then I have this one or do you have a range of talks or?
Yeah. Well, the thing is I talk about my experiences so that can't change, but what I can change is how, that might align with whatever the company or the group is really wanting to hear. So if it's teamwork, it's focused on teamwork, but the stories are the same. So I'm a storyteller. I'll tell stories about moments in my life that highlighted a certain thing, whether it was teamwork or resilience or, you know, fear and doubt or, you know, I've had people say, okay, well, our company is like, we're second in the world. We're second in Australia. We just want to get to gold. How can we go from this step and be the number one company in the country? We want to hear from you. How did you go from bronze to gold? What did you do? And so every part of the whole part of my presentation is around mindset. I don't talk about volleyball barely at all. I talk about what we did around it to get there. I mean, I'll throw in a few funny volleyball stories just to, you know, make it fun, but it's all around mindset.
I think what people don't realize sometimes, thanks, I love that, as a, whether or not you're an ex-elite volleyballer, Olympic gold medalist, or like me, ex-fat kid or whatever, like you, and no matter what area you're talking about or topic, subject matter, if you're not creating rapport with an audience, you're in trouble. So there's got to be stories and there's got to be, at the very least, there's got to be stories and hopefully stories and humor because people don't connect with information and data, not in the way that they do with you telling us about your journey.
And yeah, and that's a really interesting thing, because I think that's what I've continued to be able to speak for so many years, when most people know me for something that I achieved 20 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So you think, oh, maybe there'd be other people that they want to hear from, but they still come back to me because I do try and make it fun. I try and connect straight away. I try and be really authentic. I'm not kind of big noting this or that or the other. I'll just be authentic. I'll be real. I'm not perfectly polished. Obviously I've got better over the years. I know what stories work. I can connect. I can see it in the audience. I'll tell a story that I think's funny and not get a laugh. Well, that story's not happening again. Or I then critique myself and say, was it the delivery of the story? Did I get the punchline wrong? But it's been a fantastic opportunity to just continue to share my experiences. And what I love the most is when people come up to me afterwards and tell me about a light bulb that went off for them, When I told this story, they just go, oh, yeah, that really made me think about this, and I'm going to do this now. And even years later, I'll get a message randomly from someone and said, I saw you speak years ago, and that because of that, I did this, and this is where I am now, which is amazing. Like, so amazing. But the one thing, I have got a bit of a passion project as well, which I know is not going to be I can't live off it, but I want to teach athletes how to share their story. And I started to create a little business called The Athlete Story as well, and put up a website and thought, oh, I'm going to get all these athletes to come in and I'm going to teach them how to share their story. And then I realized that athletes don't have any money. So it's probably not something that I'm going to make a career out of, but it's a passion project that I'll always be there for athletes, and, finding a way to help athletes to share their incredible stories. I think, we can't get enough of them in Australia. Mm-hmm. We love our athletes.
When I set up my first gym, I had a similar experience in that I was just a young buff-fed bodybuilder with muscles on my eyelids and just, wanted to be massive for no particular reason other than I was insecure. And I realized really quickly that all my bodybuilder mates had no money, right? So I better start training rich people. So I'm like, all you bodybuilders can fuck off. I love you, but you don't pay my bills. So go train somewhere else. Speaking of bodies, how's your body now? How are you holding up?
Yeah, it was probably not the best time of my life at the moment. My knee, obviously, I had surgery, so I'm kind of a few months down the track. It's going very slowly. Wow. Recently, I've had an arm, shoulder kind of injury. But apart from that, I'm really healthy. It's just the old injuries, that you have to battle through. And I will continue to work on and staying strong. I'm really passionate about as we age to get strong, if you're not already strong, or to maintain your strength. So I want to get strong again. I've lost actually quite a bit of muscle very quickly in the last few months since I had the surgery and was more inactive. So I'm really looking forward to putting
come on muscle. Come on, Keza, get in the gym.
Yeah.
Come on. Where do you live? What area are you in?
I'm on the Northern Beaches in Sydney.
Well, we won't be training. All right. I thought
you're in Melbourne.
Yeah, I'm in Melbourne. I thought I'll get you in the gym and smash you in a loving, caring way. I should know this, but are you left or right-handed?
Right-handed.
So you serve right-handed, obviously.
Yep.
So how's your right rotator cuff?
Fantastic. So I had frozen shoulder a few years ago, and that was due to no injury at all. It was just a medical, like the adhesive capsulitis, where everything freezes up and, I couldn't lift my arm. It was just random. But apparently women in their 40s and above are very prone to this particular thing. And then they said to me at the time that, you're likely to probably get it in your left shoulder. Well, I think that's happening to me now. I'm getting it in my left shoulder. But apart from that, like, just my right shoulder's fantastic. Hitting the ball that hard. Luckily, I was taught a very good technique from an early age. I think when you've got the wrong technique and you're just hitting as much as we did, not good.
Mm. All right. Tell us about your coaching. Tell us what that's about. You've touched on it, but who can work with you, and how do they get involved and connect with you?
Well, look, over the years, with all the experiences that I've had, I really feel like I can, especially now after SAS and the amount of feedback I got from women in their kind of 40s and 50s, I feel like they're my niche. Women who are looking to really perform at a higher level in whatever they're doing, whether they've let themselves be second or third and they want to, you know, look after themselves again, not just from a physical place, but from a, you know, what do I want to do in my life now? Where do I want to go and how am I going to get there? Yeah. So I've kind of put together a program that I call the Art of Human High Performance. So it's just about performing at your best and getting to where you want to go, knowing who you are first, you know, what your values are, what you really want, digging into that, working out how you're going to get there, and then just, you know, being accountable if that's what they want and having me there to help them, you know, push through their fears and their doubts, especially at our age, we kind of, you know, we start to forget that we're able to do stuff.
Well, yes, you old people, you really do.
Yeah.
Fucking oldie. Fucking relic. How do people, is there a website? Where do they go?
Yeah, my website's just kerrypothast.com and my email's just info@kerrypothast.com. But I'm all over social media as well. People can just DM, PM, whatever, all the M's. All the M's.
I've got an idea for you, but I'm going to talk about it off air. I think you'll like it. I've got a suggestion for you that I think you'll like. Anyway, you're great. You're great. You're an inspiration. Thank you for winning a gold medal on behalf of our country. That was quite generous of you. And good luck with the coaching. Good luck with everything. And if you need somebody who's inspirational and amazing and straight up rock star to come and speak or work with your team or organisation, just go to Kerry's website and book the fuck in because she's grouse. So I bet you've never had an ad like that, have you?
Never had an ad like that. Love it.
You're welcome.
Very authentic, down to earth.
Stay like right me. There. Kerry Pottas, thank you for being on the You Project. We love your guts.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tiff.
Thank you. Thanks, Kerry.
Thanks, everyone. See you next time.